Welcome to this Red Meat and Wool Growth Program podcast brought to you by PRRSA.
Using satellites to determine when to move stock and turning to car wash parts to build your own jetting race. G'day, I'm Drew Radford, and all this may sound like a research lab. It's not though. It's just part of life at Coolaroo, a sheep and cattle property in the lower southeast. Richie Kirkland owns and runs the property and has one eye firmly fixed on improving efficiency. To find out how much so, he joins us for this PRRSA podcast. Thanks for your time, Richie.
No worries, Drew.
Richie, where's your property?
We're situated halfway between Millicent and Lucendale on the Conmar Road.
Now, Richie, I understand your family's been down there for a while. You're part of the soldier settler scheme, is that correct?
Yeah, Dad's old uncle was a soldier settler and took up a small block there when he returned from the war. And my father was a shearer and bought a couple of neighbouring properties, and yeah, I've bought a couple as well when I went away shearing as well.
So that soldier settler block's looking a little bigger now, mate. How big is it now?
We're about 6,500 acres now, so I reckon, I don't know what the original size was, about 800, I suppose.
And what are you farming on that, Richie?
Mixed farming. We got a few trade steers, we trade a few cattle, and prime lamb operation with composite ewes, and bit of cropping as well.
Today we want to focus on your sheep side of business. You've adopted quite a bit of tech on your property and indeed made some of your own, which we'll talk about in a minute. But what's your driving philosophy behind using a lot of technology?
Just try to make things more efficient. We didn't have a lot of labour in the early days. We were sort of by ourselves a bit. I used to process a lot of sheep by myself in yards. We had to make yards from scratch ourselves. Couldn't afford to buy new yards, so we build them ourselves, learn how to stock flow and working dogs and use sheep handlers and stuff like that just to process them more faster and more efficiently.
Well, Richie, first of all, let's look at sheep handler, that bit of technology there. I understand you're on your second one, but your flock pretty much understand that that's part of the process these days.
Yeah, they go through the handler virtually every time they go through the yards, whether it's just for a weighing, a vaccination or a drench. We very rarely drench now because of worm egg counts, and we're monitoring our flock, so we sort of haven't drenched for a couple of years, but they still go through there at shearing time to check feet, udders, mouths, animal health, fat scores. Yeah, they do know they have to go through that area. The handler gets moved to put aside for when we're crutching and scanning, so they still go through that little area to get back out the paddock, and they seem to fly through now. So processing sheep's, yeah, anything up to 1,500 an hour is quite easy.
That's really a big time and labour saving for you, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Just time. You know, we can get on with other jobs. So we're all undercover there now, so we're out of the sun and rain. So sheep work isn't a big job at home anymore.
Richie, you mentioned their egg count. You're not drenching much at all. But that's about a technology that you've got your head around as well, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. We found, I was overseeing a fella a while back. He had these couple of fecal worm egg count packs at the back of the shearing shed and didn't know what they were. They were there prior to him starting, and I said, I was all right if I grab one and give it a bit of a go. And that's where it all started. So we started doing our own egg counting and, monitoring our flock, and we only drench when we need to now. So we just check all our ewes prior to busy times of the year when they're coming through the yards, just to make sure everything's fine. And I think by doing that, we're sort of not wasting our drenches, not wasting our time, money, and the sheep are building up a bit of a resilience. We don't drench, we drench at the recommended thresholds, anything above 100 eggs per gram, but at the moment we're zeros and 50s and 30s, so we're not worrying about it.
You're talking about those numbers with some authority. That means you've got somebody independent to test that as well, by the sounds of it.
I do get I calibrate every now and then. I do it myself and then think, geez, it's they're coming up low. So I take a sample to town and double check on things to make sure I'm doing it right as well.
Again, another really big saving in terms of your labour and time. You know, drenching's not cheap either. But in terms of what sheep end up suffering from, I understand you've got a jetting race for fly and lice treatments, but you didn't buy something off the shelf either.
No, that was just a modified old Harrington sheep jetter. I pinched the same sort of technology as what the sheep handlers use with electronic eyes and all that. So I pinched the sensors, just Googled them on the internet, got a couple of sensors and got a local sort of tech guy to do up a couple of relays and solenoids and, yeah, it triggers as they run through, just through basic garden solenoids and that. So they just flow through and sort of we're doing 1,500 an hour jetting, sort of getting roughly 4 litres a head on them. And it's set up for long wool jetting if we need to. And it'll punch water down along their backs and it flows around their body. And we're also doing off shears with a spray type jet that we've sort of pinched out of the same sort of ones they use in car washes, really.
That's quite a remarkable adaptation of technology. You're making that sound pretty simple in terms of, I just did a bit of Googling, but I reckon there's a bit more that went into it than that.
Yes, they're not too bad. They're pretty simple. It's a simple machine to use. We tend to jet prior to crutching and shearing just as we get busy in the spring, sort of weaning lambs and stuff like that. We'll jet ewes just to get them through to shearing. So we're not, if we have a fly outbreak, we're sort of not behind the eight ball. But as we're finding with these composite sheep, they seem pretty tough animal. And I don't reckon the flies are going to be the issues like we were years ago when we had merinos or a first cross ewe.
That's a great example of continually looking ahead to try and manage your flock in a better way by changing your flock, essentially.
Yeah, we found the comps a bloody tough animal. Like, I'm still trying to work out stocking rates and stuff. They can get pretty big and heavy at shearing, so we're trying to manage that so they're not too heavy for the boys. And we can get them to fat score 3 pretty easy and hold them there all year now. So we're sort of upping our numbers and just monitoring better on that side of things. So they're pretty tough little sheep, really. So more of a compact animal, but a lot of muscle.
Now, you mentioned toughness there, and orphan lambs, there's not really a lot of choice when it comes to toughness and making sure they're getting fed. But you've, again, found a labour-saving solution, which I understand has essentially paid for itself.
Yeah, it paid for itself pretty quick. I was a bit hesitant when we first looked into it. It's pretty well known that you're bound to get one cold snap during lambing. And we find if we've got those odd orphan lambs or because of the composites, we're probably getting more multiples now. So if you're getting a quad or a triplet or a ewe that's had a tough start to the year and she's got 2 lambs, we'll take one off or take 2 off. And we bought this automatic Laylee feeder. Yeah, they go onto that and this, they just self-regulate themselves. They feed whenever they want. And found that, you know, we can keep them alive and just look after the ewe and the lamb that's still in the paddock by doing it.
And with sheep being worth what they are, I imagine that paid for itself pretty quickly.
It did in the first 12 months, which surprised me a bit. I wasn't expecting it, but it did. It's still sort of a bit labour intensive. You've got to go down there once, twice a day just to make sure everything's right. But an orphan lamb, or if you find one out the paddock, you can just put him in the bike or the ute and bring him back. And some lambs might take a day to get on there, but some just a couple of hours and they've worked it out. So it helps tick a few boxes on the animal ethics side of things, Drew. And I think we sort of got to look that way now. Just, you know, driving past livestock that are going to perish in the paddocks, just not on.
And, you know, you live in a part of the world which can get pretty cold, so you need to be keeping your eye out for that as well. So, you know, that's got loads of benefits.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, we have very cold, wet, windy winters. Even we have a spring lambing as well. They can suffer from a terrible rain event in the spring as well. So you're virtually guaranteed of one bad weather event at least during lambing. So we try to manage that. And a lot of the time we won't go into the paddocks. We'll check them daily or twice a day sometimes, but we won't go into the paddocks if everything's going well. We'll just sit back with binoculars, look around, and then, we'll skirt around the edges. If there's a lamb you think you might need to grab, and bring them back, put them on the machine, and away they go.
Now, Richie, I understand you've also put a lot of effort into working out feeding patterns just generally in terms of rotational grazing and also supplements. How important has that been for the healthier flock and, you know, the ongoing savings as well?
Yeah, we used to have a lot of animal health issues. Probably when I was shearing, I used to notice a bit in the southeast was predominantly a lot of steely wool, feed issues, a few other, you know, things like that. Growth rates were poor in the southeast. But I've got some blood tests done years ago and sort of trying to track a trace element deficiency I thought was an issue. And we mix up our own mineral mix now, just a loose lick. We sort of custom just mixed up from stuff we buy out of the local farm supplies. And we've been putting that out. And ever since we started doing that, our growth rate in our lambs has been phenomenal. Wool cuts are going up. No dermo, no steely wool, scaly-eared lambs, you know, the animal health. And I think that's sort of helping with the worm egg counts and all that as well, pushing them down. So by using this mineral mix, we use it all year round. Every few years, I monitor the bloods in the sheep just to double-check it. We're still on the right track. And I adjust the ration a bit, maybe make it a bit cheaper or a bit, you know, add another product as we need it. And, yeah, it's kicked some goals. It's been a game changer.
Richie, you've got a lot going on there and you seem to be pretty well keyed in with what's going on in a big flock. I understand you use EID. How important is that? And also I mentioned some software to deal with it all would be important as well.
Yeah, we've got the tags and the ewes and we've got all the hardware to read the tags, but we're still having trouble with software, trying to find something farmer-friendly and simple and easy so we can sort of track our multiple-bearing ewes from our singles a bit better. We can scan them and read them at scanning and keep them separate and everything, but yeah, I'd like to track it a bit better over a few generations. And we started doing it a couple of years ago, and I've sort of let it go by the wayside a little bit because we've expanded the business and bought another block, and so we were rebuilding numbers again. So you tend to keep any breeding ewe you can, but as we get numbers up and we want to fine-tune things and get the fertility up, we'll probably keep more ewes that will have twins and stuff like that and sell off the singles, you see. So we're going to have to start getting into it again and trying to look for some decent software we can just plug into the Tapari so it'll draft off the singles. You know, if she has a single every season, she'll get taken off and sold on. So, yeah, but like I said, we're still doing a lot more homework on it and, yeah, it'll get there, but, yeah, we're just not there at the moment.
It sounds like you'll crack the homework code without a doubt considering what you've achieved so far. Is there anything else on your horizon in terms of tech to help you run that property a little bit more easily and gain that next level efficiency?
With the cropping side, like there's that much technology available there and all we've sort of done is taken it across the livestock. So whether that's plant tissue testing of crops, trying to address trace element deficiencies and soil deficiencies, we've sort of just done the same thing with the sheep side. So we're monitoring more the sheep animal health with bloods and trace elements and everything and transferring it across there. And we've hooked into a weather station out there and doing some trial work at the moment with pastures from space again, which was an older thing that it's been put by the wayside, but they're trying to get that going again so we can calibrate our pasture growth so we can hook in with our agri-webs and stuff like that. So if we move a mob into a paddock and it's got 5,000 kilos of dry matter, we can roughly work out when they have to be shifted next with this pasture from space. Like the satellites will pick up what feeds left after a certain amount of time and trigger a message on the phone or something and notification of some sort so we know when to shift them on.
That's remarkable technology based in science as opposed to once upon a time you would have actually had to done that as a bit of a gut feel.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And it's not so bad with older generation farmers, and I'm starting to get a bit of a handle on growth and, you know, all that. But the next generation, I reckon that's where it's going to be really handy. Those young people that come into the industry and they've probably only had 12 months experience or even less, they'll be able to move a mob of sheep, 1,000 ewes into a 40-hectare paddock and measure the pasture, how high it is in there, and hopefully if it's all linked in with this pasture from space, it should be able to tell you exactly when they need to be shifted again.
Richie Kirkland, you're using an amazing array of technology and really looking to the future, and that point you've made about the next generation having that detailed information there where, you know, once upon a time it was decades learning it, is going to be such an advantage for future primary production. Thank you for taking the time and joining us in the PIRZA studio to share your insights and tell us about what you've implemented.
No worries, Drew. Thank you.
The Red Meat and Wool Growth Program is an initiative of the Department of Primary Industries and Regions and supported by Meat and Livestock Australia, SA Sheep and Cattle Industry Funds and Sheep Connect SA.